Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Who can sleep when there's so much Boston sports to talk about? This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
Sports Radio WEEI, Nick Cattles, Late Night on a Wednesday. Thanks for joining me as always. It is much appreciated. Let me jump right into this thing. You know, I was listening to the post game with Will Fleming and Sean McDonough and Joe Castiglione and Lou Maloney, and I was listening and listening, and then I heard Sean McDonough say towards the very end of his stint tonight, "I just can't get over that Celtics loss. I can't even focus on anything else." And I feel like I have to get some things off of my chest tonight before we move on to game two, which is, of course, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tip between the Heat and the Celtics. And the first thing that you've got to talk about, the inability to close games. And this has been an issue for the Celtics from the very beginning of the playoffs. They had issues closing out the Raptors over and over and over and over again. And you thought that maybe they would learn from those experiences. And we heard from the Celtics. They said, hey, listen, to a man, we learned, right? We had to figure some things out. We learned the hard way. Game three with that ridiculous OG and an OB three with a half a second left on the clock. And they've been selling to us that they have learned. They have learned from their mistakes. But yet again, there we are. Last night, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals with a 12-point lead heading into the fourth quarter, and they could not close the Heat out. A 5-point lead with 69 seconds, nice, left in the game. Could not close it out. They had a lead in overtime, and yet again, they could not close it out. The inability to close games eventually is going to catch up with this team. They got through their series against the Raptors. They're not going to be able to get through this series with the Heat and make it to the NBA Finals unless they figure it out, unless they understand what they're doing wrong and they realize what they have to do right to close games out. You can't lose a 12-point fourth quarter lead in the Eastern Conference Finals if you want to give yourself the best chance to move on. You just can't do it. So that's the first thing. The inability to close games by this team is maddening. The second thing about last night's game, and you watched it, I watched it. How bad was the offense in the final 7 to 8 minutes of that game last night? How excruciating was it to watch that offense in the final 7 to 8 minutes? The final 2 minutes or so of the fourth quarter, and then all 5 minutes of that overtime. You want to talk about terrible, atrocious, horrific offense? That's what we saw last night. And let me do one thing before I move on here. I want to separate the final shot from Tatum in the fourth quarter at the end of regulation. I actually want to separate that shot from all the other offense that we saw because I actually didn't mind that step back three. Tatum has hit that shot time and time again. He's over 40% when you're talking about long range threes. He's over 40% when you talk about unassisted threes. He's been unbelievably accurate with step back threes as well. That's a shot that you take. He didn't make it, but I did not hate that shot. I'm talking about pretty much every other shot that the Celtics took in the final 7 minutes of that game. I'm talking about Kemba Walker dribbling around, waiting forever, and then finally trying to make a move with about 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and nothing for it. The result, squadoosh. I'm talking about Tatum taking a number of tough shots. Did you realize watching that game, I didn't realize this until well after, that Kemba and Tatum were the only two Celtics to touch the basketball on offense for almost the final 3 minutes of that fourth quarter. That's inexcusable. That is inexcusable. Everybody else is watching Kemba and Tatum do what they want to do, and nobody is doing anything about it, including the head coach, and I'll get to him in a minute. But I've been sitting here for the past couple of weeks talking about how great it is to see somebody like Kemba not play like Kyrie Irving. How great it was to see Kemba share the basketball. How great it was to see Kemba make the right play at the right time. And then last night, all of a sudden, Kemba turned into Kyrie the final few minutes. You remember that series against Milwaukee last year? I tried to erase it from my memory like you did. But we all watched Kyrie with inexplicable possession after inexplicable possession in that series against the Bucks. Taking so many bad shots, dribbling the air out of the basketball. And there we were, watching Kemba do the same damn thing last night. And the head coach on the sidelines allowing him to do it. Stevens watching that offense, and I guess feeling like there was nothing wrong. You know, you do have timeouts, Brad. You could use your timeouts. You could pull the guys aside and say, this isn't Celtics basketball. This isn't what gave us the 12-point lead. What gave us the 12-point lead was sharing the ball, trusting your teammates. Here was Stevens last night after the game talking about that dreadful offense that finished that loss.
Hey, Brad, what are you seeing happens with the offense late in games where it just seems to the ball movement kind of dries up and it becomes a lot of ISO ball?
I think obviously switching has something to do with it, but we need to handle it better. There's no question about it. So not only was there probably too much pounding of the ball, it was also not as much space the way that they were guarding. So we need to do a better job of that. We'll go back and look at different ways that we can attack better at the end of the game.
I've defended Brad Stevens all throughout this postseason. I've said right here on Sports Radio WEEI, Nick Cattles is the name, by the way, here on a Wednesday night. I've said over the past several weeks that Stevens is a top five coach, that I would take Stevens over so many coaches in this league, and that he's so smart. The after timeout plays, how he manages personalities, how he's been able to develop all of these young guys. Well, you know what? Last night, that was brutal. I thought Stevens, the end of game performance from him, not just Kemba and Tatum offensively, but the end of game performance from Brad Stevens was a disaster last night. It was no doubt a dumpster fire. From your head coach down to everybody else on the floor. Jaylen Brown was on the back of a milk carton. Dude couldn't even get a touch in that fourth quarter. I mean, in the last 5 minutes of that game, I don't know how many times Jaylen Brown touched the basketball. He had the tip in the overtime, which was nice. He couldn't even get his hands on the rock. Marcus Smart, who, kind of a scary thought, one of your best shooters in that game last night, not even touching the ball. And Stevens stood there and watched that offense play out. He knows what's going on. He knows what's wrong. And we praise him, and I do too, with the after timeout calls. Well, when you need a bucket and you've just walked into isolation basketball and not doing anything productive, how about you call a timeout and draw something up so when you're up by five, when you're up by two or three with seconds to go, you can build upon that lead and put all the pressure back on Miami. What a tough loss in overtime last night. Almost unbelievable. Want your thoughts on that? 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line is 37937. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Nick C Radio. Again, at Nick C Radio. I want your thoughts on the Celtics last night. And if you've got some thoughts for Game 2 tomorrow night as well, we can also move a little bit forward if you'd like. 617-779-7937. We'll get your reaction on the game last night. And I also want to dive deeper into the Kemba Walker experience over the past, I don't know, five or six games, but especially the last three. That experience has not been a great one. It's Sports Radio WEEI Late Night on a Wednesday with Nick Cattles.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Because sleep is for losers. This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
Nick Cattles with you here on a late night Wednesday night, Sports Radio WEEI. Will be cranking up until 1 a.m. Your thoughts on the Celtics, 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line, of course, is 37937, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nick C Radio. So, you know, you look through the last, I don't know, five or six games, and it's rather obvious that Kemba Walker is just not himself. He has given this team an erratic performance after an erratic performance way too many times for my liking. And last night, Kemba was yet again a straight-up liability. I don't need Kemba to be great. I don't even need Kemba to be very good. If Kemba was just good, I'd be okay with it. I would be able to accept that. If Kemba was just good, I would be good with that idea. But Kemba, a complete liability. And it's really tough to not like Kemba or get angry at Kemba, get frustrated with Kemba, because we all know that he is seemingly a great teammate. His heart is always in the right place. There's no questioning his effort. I mean, when you watched Kyrie at times last year, you could question Kyrie's effort. There's no doubt about that. Not consistently question it, but there were times you'd watch him play and say, does he even want to be out there? More times than I would like to admit, I would say that to myself. You don't see that with Kemba. Kemba tries, and I've got to wonder if Kemba is trying almost too hard. I thought early in the game last night that it looked like he was almost aiming his shots. He was like guiding the basketball. He looked like he was tight, and that's a concern. He's got to get loose. He's got to feel good. He's got to be confident. And he's got to walk into these games believing that he can be a difference maker. And he was a liability instead of the difference maker you needed last night. You don't have Gordon Hayward. You need Kemba, Jaylen, and Tatum to play good basketball. And when you look at Kemba over his last five games, he has shot 5 of 34 from three-point land. That's crazy. I mean, Kemba's not a sharp shooter compared to some other guys in the league, but 5 of 34 from three-point land in the last five games? So this goes beyond the starting of the box and one against Kemba in that Toronto series. It goes beyond how he closed that series out. It goes to now five games in length where he has not been able to throw the ball in the ocean from three-point land. Defensively, he tries, he gives you effort, and I think he's actually been okay on the defensive end for most of this season. But against Toronto and last night against Goran Dragic, and Dragic again, he is a just nightmare for the Celtics. He has continued to just hurt the seas getting into the paint. He's going to penetrate. He's either going to attack the rim and finish. He's going to attack the rim and get fouled. Or he's going to penetrate and he's going to kick out to the shooters. And we all know Miami's got way too many shooters that you could be comfortable with. They've got like 6 or 7 guys that can shoot the ball. And so there was Kemba last night, allowing penetration into the paint, and then sometimes helping too much. And that's been a problem too. Way too many times in that series against Toronto, Kemba would help off of the shooter and leave somebody wide ass open, and the next thing you know, you gave up 3 points. So he's got the effort, but it's almost like he's trying too hard. He's pressing at times. He's pressing on both ends of the floor. He's struggling offensively, so now he's overdoing it on the defensive end, and because he's overdoing it on the defensive end, he's overhelping, and because he's overhelping, he's putting his team in a terrible, terrible spot trying to defend the three ball. Because he's trying so hard to take a charge, he's putting his team in a difficult position. Liability. And I hate to use that word for any Celtic during the Eastern Conference Finals, but damn it, let's call it the way it is. Let's call it the way we see it. He was a liability last night on both ends. And I don't have to tell you. Let's let Kemba tell you. Here he was last night.
Kemba, obviously you hit some big shots down the stretch in this game, but you're still not obviously where you want to be. What do you see as being, you know, the rationale, the reason for that, and obviously how do you fix it?
Just playing terrible. To be honest, there's not much I can say, but I just have to be better. You know, I just do for this team on both ends of the floor. Got to make better decisions. Just got to make shots overall.
I'm just playing terrible. And it feels like he's thinking about it a little bit.
Just playing terrible.
Looks like he's aiming early on with these shots, which usually tells you that somebody is pressing. I mean, even his ball handling is off, right? I mean, usually during the season, we've seen Kemba. He's got, Kenny Smith the other night on TNT said it, and I agree with Kenny Smith. If you want to talk about guys with the best handles in the league, Kemba's in the top, I don't know, 5 or 6. He's that good handling the basketball. But even last night when he was trying to handle it, he was all over the place. He lost his dribble on a couple of occasions. I haven't seen that. I have not seen that consistently from Kemba. So his shot is off. His handle is off. His decision-making is off. He's waiting too long at times to actually get moving. He's leaving his feet. No idea what he wants to do with the ball. He's taking inexcusable tough shots that are contested at times. And I know he's made a number of tough shots this year, and he can make tough shots. But when you are, as Joe Namath said it, struggling, you might not want to take the toughest shots possible. You might want to get some better looks. You might not want to leave your feet not knowing what to do with the basketball. You might not want to give yourself 5 seconds on the shot clock to create a shot when you're already struggling. There's a few things that Kemba can do to get out of this. And you've got to feel with his resume and his talent, he eventually will get out of it. At least you can hope that he will find a way. And again, I'm not asking him to go out there tomorrow night and drop a 30 spot on Miami. I'm just asking him to not get in his own way. I'm just asking him to not puke on himself. I'm just asking him to be good. Just good, Kemba. That's all we need. We just need you to be good. Not great, good. And a couple of things that Kemba can do. First of all, see the double. See the double. When you see the double, get rid of it, and then you can get the ball back if you'd like. Sometimes he dribbles himself into trouble towards the sidelines, and he allows the defense to collapse on him and double him, and he makes life difficult for himself. He's got to be able to see, it's almost like a quarterback. He's got to be able to see the blitz. When a second guy blitzes towards him and they're trying to double him, he's got to get rid of the basketball quick. He's got to read that blitz, find the open man, get rid of it, and then put Miami's defense in a difficult spot because now they're shuffling and scrambling and trying to figure out what they've got to do. He's got to see the double team before it hits him, get rid of the basketball, and then open up other opportunities for he and his teammates. Really be aggressive early. Like right off the jump. Get to the basket. Try to draw a foul or two. Get yourself to the free throw line. You know, it's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. When guys are struggling shooting the basketball, you try to get to the free throw line so you can build a little bit of confidence. So try to get into that paint. And if you can't finish at the rim when you get into the paint, know where you're going with it. Don't get stuck under the basket and turn it over or take a bad shot. Don't force it. Drive the lane and either try to finish if it's there or kick it out. Get going early. Get your aggression going early. Feel some kind of flow within the game. Feel some kind of confidence. I just feel like if Kemba goes out there tomorrow night and hits his first three shots in the first quarter, you will see a different Kemba. The box and one shook him up. Absolutely no doubt shook him up. Nick Nurse got in Kemba's head for a bit. And he still hasn't really found himself. He's still clunky. So be aggressive early. Try to take it to the rim. Try to draw some kind of fouls from Miami, who tend to be aggressive defensively. I also want Kemba to keep shooting open shots. If the shot is there, you've got to take it. The Celtics are not paying Kemba the money they're paying him to turn down open shots. Even if he's missing. If he goes 0 for 7 tomorrow night to start the game, but every single solitary shot of those 7 is open, I'm fine with it. Because for the Celtics to be as good as they can be, they need him to start making shots. So don't turn down any open shots, Kemba. Don't overpass the ball. If you're open, shoot. That's what you are paid to do. Shoot the ball when it's there. I've just got to trust his resume, right? Don't we have to trust his resume? Don't we have to look at this and say, okay, there's no doubt he's been in a five-game funk. But eventually, he's got to break out of that. Eventually, he's going to have that moment, right? You would hope so. You would think so. That eventually, he would find some kind of rhythm. He's too good. He's too talented to continue to play as badly as he has played. And maybe it's just me hoping. One final thing, what can the coach do? When I talked about it in the first segment tonight, I thought Stevens was bad late in the fourth quarter of that game. He didn't help his team out. He didn't help guide them. What can he do to help Kemba? Can you run multiple screens over and over and over again? Can you run some more pick and roll up high with Daniel Tice and, you know, try to force a mismatch? Can you get Kemba off the ball a little bit and see what he can do? They've got to figure it out. Because if Kemba continues to be a liability, this series is going to be over sooner rather than later. And I think the Celtics have a golden opportunity to get to the NBA Finals. But they need Kemba to get out of his own way. They need him to start playing good basketball tomorrow night. 7 o'clock tip, Kemba. You go nowhere else to go. You know it's in Orlando. You know it's in the bubble. You know who you're playing. It's time to get going, man. It's time to get it going. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line is 37937. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Nick C Radio. It is late night on a Wednesday, Sports Radio WEEI.
You got to get angry. You got to get mean. That's the only way you can play.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is WEEI Late Night with Nick Cattles.
Tatum on the NBA logo with 8. Makes his way to the three-point line. Down 2. Drives. Blocked at the rim by Adebayo. 3 seconds to go. Bam Adebayo may have just won game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals for the Miami Heat.
He may have won it. Yeah, he absolutely won it. What were the Celtics supposed to do after that block? That Bam Adebayo block. I'm just happy that happened in game 1. If that happened in a deciding game, oh my God. I would never forget that. It's still going to be burned into my memory, but it would have been that much worse if that was a deciding game. So thankfully, it was only game 1. If you have any Celtics thoughts, feel free. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Nick Cattles here, Sports Radio WEEI Late Night on a Wednesday. I do want to shift gears here, though, and talk some Patriots. Because I feel like some people watched the game on Sunday against the Dolphins, and there was this kind of weird feeling from some circles, not a lot of people. I don't think it was the majority. I think the majority of people watching that game on Sunday said, okay, I can deal with this. I'm enjoying this. And we all knew it was not going to be a shootout. I mean, I've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks. The Patriots are going to want to run the football effectively this year. That is their path to victory. That is what they need to do effectively if they want to win consistently this season. They've got to run the football. And I think in a perfect world, they would have to run for, I don't know, 2,800 yards. If they could rush for about 2,800 yards this year, they would feel really good about their offense. Really good. And what we saw on Sunday was a lot of read option. Not RPOs. We didn't see many RPOs. I think we saw maybe one RPO on Sunday, which is, you know, the run pass option stuff that you see other teams run an awful lot. What we saw was read option. What we saw was, you know, Cam Newton making a decision at the line of scrimmage, watching the defense, what they're going to do, watching them react, and then himself deciding, am I going to hand this off to Rex Burkhead or Sony Michel, or am I going to keep it and run it with my own powerful legs and linebacker body? There was a lot of read option on Sunday, and they only threw the ball 19 times. And there's some concern, again, only by some people. I think it is a minority of Patriots fans, and there are some in the media, if you're watching TV this week, asking whether or not this offense for the Pats is going to become predictable. Is it going to be too predictable? If they continue to run the read option, if they can't throw the football more than 19 times, is it going to become way too predictable from Josh McDaniels? Well, here's McDaniels on that thought.
I don't know that any one thing, if you do it over and over and over, is sustainable in our league. The coaches and the players each week are too good. You know, so like I said, I've called 60 passes, and believe me, I don't want to live in that world, you know, too long, or you're going to get, you know, you're going to get in trouble, you know, whether it's injuries or just, you know, the success that you'll have is just going to deteriorate, or, you know, too much of this or that, depending on what it is, and you're going to become very predictable.
So McDaniels is saying, listen, I don't necessarily want to run the ball as much as we ran it on Sunday. And in the first half, they ran the ball a ton. I don't even know how many passes Newton attempted in the first half. It felt like a handful. I mean, they did not throw the football. They almost made a concerted effort to not throw the ball in the first half. And then that first series in the second half, they started to utilize the play action, and they let Cam throw the football a few times, and then they kind of got it going with a little bit more balance. But is this offense going to be, you know, too predictable for our liking? I'm not worried about it. I don't think it's going to be too predictable. You know, the first thing we've got to acknowledge, we all need to be patient. And I am one of the least patient people walking on God's green earth right now. I have almost zero patience. Ask anybody who I've worked with, worked for. I have no patience. Ask my wife, Kelly. Zero patience, pretty much. But we have to be patient. We have to acknowledge and understand that this Patriots offense that we're seeing in the first week or two and even month, this offense is in its infancy. This is a little baby. We're talking about infancy here, folks. They were not going to be shot out of a cannon throwing everything out there on the first Sunday. If you had that kind of expectation, I've got a word for that kind of expectation. It is unreasonable. That would be an unreasonable expectation if you expected the Patriots to roll out there and give you everything you could possibly imagine. It wasn't going to happen. You know, on Hart and Cattles, I'm with Andy Hart on Saturday mornings from 9 to 1 here on Sports Radio WEEI. On Hart and Cattles, I talked about this a few times with Andy before they kicked off. I said, listen, we've all got to be kind of patient with this offense. We've got to understand that the first 4 to 6 weeks, this is going to be almost like a trial period here, what we're watching. I mean, Cam parachuted into this offense. He parachuted onto this roster very late in the process. He had to get caught up on the playbook. He had to figure out his teammates. You got all the COVID circumstances. You've got no preseason football. You've got no joint practices. This was always going to be about patience. And I have been stressing to people. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it on late night. The Patriots were going to go slowly with Cam. And what they were going to do early on was likely stay vanilla. Now, read option isn't vanilla when you talk about big picture stuff and what they've done in the past. But what I mean by that is they were going to focus on Cam's strengths and hide his weaknesses. They were going to do things early on this season that they know Cam could do, that Cam was comfortable with, and that would fit their strengths as an offensive line and their roster. Where is this team strong? They're strong at quarterback when Cam is running. They're strong at the offensive line. They're strong in that running back room with some depth. So they were going to stick to their strengths early on in this season. They were going to crawl before they start to walk with hopes by Thanksgiving they could start jogging a little bit. So we've all got to be patient. Secondly, you know, when you look at the Patriots' history, what does it tell you? What it tells you is the Patriots always make adjustments. And what we just saw against Miami on Sunday doesn't necessarily mean that's what we're going to see against Seattle on Sunday night. The Patriots game plan specifically to the opponent. And they saw Miami, and they said to themselves, oh yeah, we're going to run it down their throat. We can run against that defensive front. We're going to just maul them up front. We're going to run read option. We're going to put the, you know, football and decisions in Cam's hands. When to hand off, when to keep it. and we're going to just keep trucking along. We're going to run downhill against that team. We'll sprinkle in, you know, some stuff with Edelman, and we'll do a couple of other nice little, you know, trickery kind of things here and there. But this is going to be a game where we're going to smash them in the mouth. And if they can't stop us, we're going to keep smashing them in the mouth. And they will adjust. If they look at a defense, and Seattle's defense is obviously better than Miami's. And I know Miami, listen, Byron Jones, he could be an all-pro corner this year. He's fantastic. But when you look at Seattle, they've got some tough dudes. You know, they've got Wagner on the second level. They've got Reed on the defensive line. Jamal Adams is going to sneak up in the box, and he's going to be sitting there, you know, near the line of scrimmage, causing havoc. They've got a better defense than Miami. But what we've learned from, I can't tell you how many times I've talked about the Patriots adjusting, you know, here in Boston. I've talked about it a billion times on the air before. Right when you think they're going to do something, they do something different. And so I don't think they're going to be predictable. I don't think they're going to allow a trend to develop. Now, they will have some kind of, you know, personality to this offense, no doubt. And we might look back and say this is more of a running offense. But they're not just going to keep running 10, 11, 12 plays straight. They're not going to give you a first half like we saw the first half on Sunday every single week. That's not going to happen. And if you don't believe me, just listen to Chris Sims, who was on Quick Slants with Tommy Curran this week.
But as we know, what New England did and everything like that, it won't stay the same. It's going to continue to grow off of what they did. So they will be ready for that next move and adjustments to go, okay, yeah, we showed all these Cam Newton runs and all these great creative things we can do, but now that's going to force defenses' hands to do things to take it away. And knowing Belichick and Josh McDaniels and how they operate, they already have their plan B ready for, hey, we think teams will do this, so our next move off of that has to be these plays to expose that, to keep everything functioning at a high level.
Nick Cattles here on a Wednesday night, late night sports radio, WEEI. So what are the next steps? What is the plan B? If the Patriots are setting up defenses, and I think they are, if they're setting up defenses as well as doing what they are good at right now at the beginning of this season, what are the next steps that they can take that could really take advantage of defenses? Well, one of the things they can do, I brought this up just a few moments ago, run pass option. They can run more RPOs. Now, they only ran, likely, if you look at it, probably one of those. They might have given the run pass option to Cam once on Sunday. They can do more of that moving forward. And the reason why that is so effective is if you can run the ball like the Patriots ran the ball on Sunday, over 200 rushing yards, if you can at least give the threat to the defense that you can run it down their throat if they don't respect that part of your offense, that is going to open up a lot of avenues when you run out there and you actually start to execute some of those RPOs. You catch those defenses, focus way too much on the run, and then that's when you hit them. That's when you hit them with those RPOs. And then they have a really tough time deciphering what is going to come their way and when is it going to come their way. So I think you'll start to see this offense develop more of that RPO game. Secondly, I think you'll see more screen passes. I think you'll see the running backs involved with screen passes a little bit more. I think you'll see the tight ends involved. Let's not forget, Devin Asiasi hardly played on Sunday. Dalton Keene was inactive. Now, Keene was not on the injury report today, so I would expect Keene to be healthy for Sunday night. So I think you can start to see the development of these tight ends. Now, I'm not telling you they're going to catch 50 passes this year. I don't think that's going to happen. But even if you could hit Asiasi up the seam every once in a while, even if you can put Keene in the backfield, line him up as an H-back, we all got to pay attention to that. His number is in the 40s. His number being in the 40s tells us something. He's going to be the H-back. They're going to move him around, I think, an awful lot on this offense. I think you'll see Dalton Keene on the line blocking. I think you'll see Keene on the line as a receiver coming off of of the line with those like little quick outs for tight ends. I think you'll see him line up in the slot at times. I think you'll see him line up behind Cam Newton. I think you can see him run the football off of some of that read option look that we saw on Sunday. And then you start to mix some stuff in like screens to him and the running backs and start using that play action even more than you did on Sunday, because once you start to run the ball, yes, you don't need to run the ball to have play action be effective, but it does help. So RPOs will start to see get developed. I think we'll see some more screen game from this offense. I think we'll see more misdirection and swing passes to the wide receivers, including N'Keal Harry. I think we'll see some more bubble screens that we've always seen with this offense, especially to Harry. So I think you'll start to see McDaniels slowly but surely. Again, patience is a virtue. I think you will see McDaniels slowly but surely start to add to this offense week after week after week after week, understanding that he can install more this week than he installed last week. Now, the one question that I have, and I think I know the answer, the one question that I have is, does this team have somebody who can beat the secondary deep? Because I do think they're one of those guys away from having a better offense than what is going to eventually develop here in 2020. Is Damier Bird that guy? He wasn't that guy on Sunday. But to be fair to Bird, he was lined up against Jones an awful lot. And as I said, you know, a few minutes ago, Byron Jones is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. He's going to be fighting for an all-pro spot. So I don't think you watch that game on Sunday and take too much out of it regarding Bird. I would like to see Damier Bird against, you know, some lesser cornerbacks. Can he create that kind of deep threat, that kind of game speed that this offense sorely needs? Harry's not that guy. Edelman is not that guy. They need somebody, especially off these RPO actions when they start running those, they need somebody that can bolt down the field and beat a defense in a heartbeat. That's what they need. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line is 37937. You can follow me on Twitter as well. It's at Nick C Radio. Talking about one of those playmakers, playmaking wide receiver. One of those guys available. I'm not talking about Allen Robinson, but is there an available playmaking wide receiver out there? Some initials, OBJ, maybe, just maybe. We'll talk about that. OBJ, if he is available, is it a dangerous thing for the Patriots to go after him? Would I deal for Odell Beckham Jr. if he was available? I'll give you my answer and more, your reaction as well. Sports Radio WEEI, late night on a Wednesday with Nick Cattles.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Who can sleep when there's so much Boston sports to talk about? This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
Would it be too risky for the Patriots to try to trade for Odell Beckham Jr.? Now, Allen Robinson has been rumored over the last day or two to be looking to get out of Chicago, but that stuff has cooled down earlier today. Matt Nagy, their head coach, really pumped the tires of Robinson and wanting them there. And Robinson came out and said that he's never wavered about the city of Chicago. Reading the tea leaves, it seems like Robinson in Chicago is back working towards a negotiation to get that extension done that apparently had at least been talked about a little bit over the prior weeks until Robinson finally said, hey, how about you just deal me, reportedly. Now, it sounds like Robinson is going to, you know, he's going to walk away and be fine from this kind of conversation, and he's going to focus on Chicago and all that good stuff. That's at least what it sounds like right now. So if you were expecting Allen Robinson, I don't think he's available. I actually think it's more likely that he signs an extension than he gets dealt, because it just doesn't make any sense. They need all the help they can get from Mitchell Trubisky. Robinson is their best offensive player. And Ryan Pace, the GM out in Chicago, his job might be on the line. They've got to win some football games this year, so Pace looks good. I mean, he's the guy that traded up to draft Mitchell Trubisky instead of drafting Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. So he has to win some games this year, and you don't get any better this season by trading your best offensive player. So I don't think Robinson is going to be available, which leads us to Odell Beckham. Mike Francesa, formerly of WFAN, of course, he came out and said over the last 36 hours or so that Beckham was on the block, that Cleveland was trying to figure out, gauge the market for OBJ, and that they were interested in trying to find a suitor for him. Now, others came out, Brent Albright, one of those guys, came out and said, you know, no, that's not true. Others have come out and said, I don't think that's true. So there have been some conflicting reports about Beckham. Here's the reason why, though, I think we can talk about Beckham as a possibility. Not telling you that it's a likelihood, but here's why I think it's at least a possibility. Would it shock you if Cleveland turned around and traded OBJ this year? I mean, hypothetically speaking, let's say that Cleveland gets out to a, I don't know, 1-4 start, 1-5 start, and they're looking at, man, oh man, what the hell's happening to our organization? It's continuing to be bad. We thought we were going to turn it around this year. We thought last year's problems had to do with good old Freddie Kitchens. We got rid of Kitchens. We kicked his ass out of the organization. But here we are with our new guy, Kevin Stefanski, who was supposed to be the next big thing for us as a coach, and we continue to struggle. We've got a former number one pick overall that we thought was going to be the franchise quarterback for the next dozen years, and he's having issues. All of a sudden, he's inaccurate. He's not playing like we thought he was going to play. And then we've got a big money receiver in OBJ who's not doing a damn thing. I mean, last Sunday, I know that he drew 3 pass interference calls, which is nice, but 3 catches, 22 yards for Beckham. And it's not like last year he was any great shakes for the Browns. So if they get off to a slow start this season, things are going to again roll downhill, and we're going to have lots of questions about that team. They cannot afford to stink again. They really can't. So I actually think that the Browns, hypothetically speaking, you can absolutely envision that team continuing to struggle and saying to themselves, we're desperate. You know, it didn't work last year. It's not working this year. We've got to make some moves. We've got to do something. It would not shock me if that something was OBJ. Now, I know some people say, wait a minute, you know, come on. This guy is kind of, he's been a malcontent. He headbutted a kicking net and all that stuff, and he has shown a lot of emotion and attitude at times in the sidelines towards teammates and all that stuff. And why would you deal for him? Would you deal for him? Is he too risky? Nope. I would deal for OBJ in a heartbeat. I would deal for him in a split second. And there's so many reasons why I would trade for Odell Beckham. And the first reason why I would do that if I was Bill Belichick is because he fills a huge need. I was talking about it in the last segment. One of the questions about this Patriots offense, and I think it's going to be a question that continues to be asked throughout this season, if they don't address it, if Damier Bird isn't that guy, do they have somebody that can beat the defense? Do they have somebody that can, quote unquote, take the top off? Do they have that guy? And right now, that is a major question. And I think many people in the media, like myself and even fans, they don't feel confident that the Patriots have that guy. N'Keal Harry is not the kind of guy that's just going to run downfield and blast by DBs for a 60-yard touchdown. He's not necessarily the guy who's going to catch a slant route and take it to the house 50 yards downfield. That is an element to this offense that if the Patriots added that element, their offense would be so much more dangerous than it is currently. It's a huge need. Another reason why I would no doubt go after OBJ. He's going to be 28 years old in November. You know, sometimes it feels like these guys are around forever. They come out so early. The day-to-day 24/7 news cycle, social media, it just always feels like these guys are older than they really are. He's 27 right now. And when you look at athletes and you talk about their primes, prime years for an athlete could be anywhere from, you know, 26 to about 33 or so. Old school baseball used to be, you know, 27 to 32 years old was the magic mark. OBJ is still in his prime. He still has, I think, you know, 4, 5, 6 really good years left. And it's not like he's got a terrible contract, by the way. You look at wide receiver across the league, that market has started to explode. Julio Jones is making $22 million a year. Amari Cooper is making $20 million a year. You know how much OBJ is making the next 3 years? Beckham is on the books the next 3 years at $15 million a year. That is not too bad at all. When you look at the other receivers and the money that they're making across the league, $15 million a year for the next 3 years, that is not bad at all. And I know, again, malcontent at times, and he has not been productive or as productive as people expected him to be in Cleveland, but I would love to see Beckham on a winner. Like, I would love to see OBJ on a winner. I would love to see Beckham with a legitimate quarterback. I would love to see what he would look like if he was put in that kind of situation. We're talking about somebody. Let's not get it twisted. OBJ is a top five receiver when he is right. And some would argue that Beckham is a top three receiver when he is right. And even other people would argue that he is the best receiver in the game when he is right. Now, I wouldn't go that far. I've always been partial to Julio Jones, but he is a top five level wide receiver kind of talent. That's how good he can be. And you have him wrapped up for the next 3 years on the books for $15 million per, and he's only 27 years old. The final year of that deal, you're talking about him being 30? Top five level wide receiver talent. He fills one of the biggest needs, if not the biggest need for this offense, a playmaking wide receiver who has the kind of speed to beat you downfield, who can turn a 5-yard pass into a 55-yard touchdown. And I also have to look at it and say to myself, could you imagine OBJ in the right kind of situation? Look at where he's been. You know, playing alongside Eli Manning as he rotted away in New York. Getting traded to Cleveland for Baker Mayfield to throw him passes and be more inaccurate than we ever thought Mayfield would be. How about the coaches? Ben freaking McAdoo with his slicked back hair, that goop, and that creepy mustache? Think about his head coaches in the league. Think about the guys who were given the responsibility to put Beckham in the right situation to make him successful. Ben McAdoo, Pat Shurmur, Freddie Kitchens. The jury is still out on Kevin Stefanski. But think about all the coaches that he has had. Think about the lack of players that have been around him. Think about the quarterback play. Think about the bad offensive lines that the Giants have had and that Cleveland had last year. And they're banged up this season. It's not like he's been given an embarrassment of riches around him consistently. It's not like he's had a really good coach to help guide him. And that would be, you know, if Beckham was dealt, it would be the second time that he was traded in about 18 months. And maybe, just maybe, if you were wondering if there was any kind of humility within OBJ, I think we'd have a pretty good chance of finding that out if he was dealt for the second time in about 18 months. And here's the last thing I would say about why I would 100% go after Beckham. It's a buy low situation. And, you know, I trust Belichick to be able to get the most out of Beckham and to make sure that he doesn't, quote unquote, lose Beckham. I trust this coaching staff. I trust Cam to, you know, make sure that the OBJ experiment stays on the rails. It's a buy low situation, though, man. I don't think Cleveland's going to be asking for a ton for Beckham. If they're desperate enough and they're looking to get rid of him, I don't think you're going to have to overpay. So that's the one guy I would identify. And, you know, I think it's at least a possibility that he could be dealt because of the current situation that's going on in Cleveland. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line is 37937. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Nick C Radio. Coming up next, you might want to enjoy Stephon Gilmore right now as much as you can, because I don't think you're going to have that opportunity next season. It's Late Night on a Wednesday, Sports Radio WEEI with Nick Cattles.
Because sleep is for losers. This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, so hear me out. I truly believe that 2020 is going to be Stephon Gilmore's last year with the Patriots. And I think we all have to be ready for that. I think we all have to be ready for the idea that Gilmore will not be on this team next year. He is not going to be on this team. I find it very hard to believe. And going back to last week and even the week before, I had talked about Gilmore. I think I talked about him on this show. I certainly talked about him on Hart and Cattles on Saturday morning here on Sports Radio WEEI, 9 a.m. till 1 p.m., ding, ding. And when I talked about Gilmore, I found it interesting what was going on with, you know, his absence from camp. And he certainly had stressed that his absence wasn't due to money. It was not a contractual holdout. But the timing of it all seemed way too coincidental to not believe it had to do something with money. And when you look at the Tre'Davious White contract that was signed, when you look at the Jalen Ramsey contract that was signed, it was just kind of common sense, wasn't it? I mean, it was common sense that Gilmore would look at Ramsey making more than $20 million a year and look at White, who I think is, you know, over $17 million a year, look at those guys and say, wait a minute. I was the 2019 Defensive Player of the Year. I play the same position as those two guys. And those guys are making how much more money than I am? You know, Gilmore's looking at it saying, Ramsey's making like almost $10 million more annually than I'm set to make this year and next year? Yeah, that's not going to work out for me. So you had Gilmore not there at camp for a few days. Then they kind of explained it away and all of that. You had the cornerback extensions happening as well. And then, hey, what do you know? All of a sudden, Gilmore's getting more money. And Burt Breer from SI wrote about the specifics regarding Gilmore's contract. And really what it was a restructuring. And Field Yates had some of this information as well. It's not necessarily a raise. What the Patriots did was, they took $4.5 million from Gilmore's till next year and gave it to him this year. They gave him a $4.5 million advance. That's what they did. They gave him $4.5 million from next year's salary so he can have it this year. His 2020 base is now $13 million. That goes up from $10.5 million. And his per-game roster bonuses are now $2.5 million. That goes up from $500,000. And next year's base salary is $7 million, which is down from the $11.5 million that was on the books. And Breer also adds that the Patriots included $2 million in incentives for Defensive Player of the Year, which, you know, that counts as likely to be earned since he won that last year. That goes against the cap. It's not going to, I find it very hard to believe that Gilmore will win back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year awards. If Gilmore does not win the DPOY, they get $2 million off of next year's cap for the Pats. So this is a cash advance. It's a cash advance this year. The Patriots are likely going to get $2 million off of next year's cap by giving Gilmore this chunk of change, this $4.5 million this year. And I think this is the beginning of the end. I just don't think Gilmore will be here next season. This is it to me. Let's kind of look at this in its simplest form. If you wanted Gilmore long term, then what would you do? Dylan, let me ask you, if you were the Patriots and you wanted, with every fiber of your being, you wanted Gilmore to be on this team for the next 3 or 4 years, and he goes to you and he asks you for more money, what would you do if you really wanted him a year for the next 3 or 4 years?
If you really want the guy, you pay the guy.
Yes, and you don't pay him via a cash advance. You pay him a legitimate extension. You go back to Gilmore and you say, okay, yeah, let's play some ball. You want a raise. We want you for the next, 3 or 4 years. So let's work something out. Well, let's give you this deal for X every year, right? This is your AAV, your annual average value. Let's give you the AAV of, 16 million, 17 million. Let's bring you in on a 3 to 4 year extension, keep you here for another 3 years or so. And then once that deal runs out, we're good. Business was good. We won. You were great for us. Now it's time to move on. If you want the guy long term, then you would pay the guy long term. You would have given him an extension. When he went to you about making more money, and Greg Bedard and others have reported that Gilmore did have those conversations behind closed doors with the Patriots, or at least Gilmore's representation, they go to you and they say, we think he's underpaid. Well, if you really wanted him beyond this year, then you would go back to the representation and say, all right, let's work out an extension then. Well, let's work out an extension that is best for both the team and the player. They didn't do that. They gave him a cash advance. A cash advance. Then you look at his age. In 3 days, Gilmore will be 30 years old. An early happy birthday to Stephon Gilmore. He'll be 30 in 3 days. Do you think Belichick is going to be willing to give a cornerback at the age of 31 years old because he still has one more year left on his deal? Do you think Belichick would be willing to give a cornerback at the age of 31 his next big fat contract? That is not happening. What we know of Belichick, do you think he's going to give Gilmore that kind of earth-shattering deal at the age of 30, 31? No way, no how, which is one of the main reasons why they didn't offer him the extension. I mean, you look at the cornerback market, it's exploding. If you want to keep Gilmore beyond this year, you're really going to have to pay the freight. You're going to be paying that guy a lot of money. You got to fork over a lot of money to make sure that he's happy. And being 30 years old in 3 days, I don't think Belichick would be doing cartwheels to make sure he was keeping Gilmore happy. I don't think Bill Belichick looks at that Jalen Ramsey contract and says, oh yeah, we can handle that for Stephon. We can handle that for him. He's been great. He was the Defensive Player of the Year last season. We can give him that kind of a contract. No way. Belichick's not talking about that. Belichick's not even thinking about that. And honestly, as great as Gilmore has been, and his record speaks for itself, doesn't it? I mean, again, the guy was the defensive player of the year last season. He's been great. He's been great. He's competitive. He is a shutdown corner for most of the time. He says the right things. He does the right things. He has been your quintessential Patriot. Been great. It's been great. But if there's one position that the Patriots could actually survive losing somebody as good as Gilmore, you could argue it would be cornerback. As good as Gilmore has been. I mean, have you noticed that over the past couple of months, and this isn't coming from the Patriots. This isn't like, you know, public relations 101. The Patriots, you know, yes, they leak stuff out. The Jared Stidham PR push was delicious. That was one of the best things I've ever witnessed, right? Everybody was talking up Stiddy. Stiddy was going to be the best thing. He was going to be the next best quarterback that anybody has ever seen on planet Earth. He was inactive on Sunday. But when they didn't have Cam Newton, he was going to be the greatest thing ever, right? So, you know, the Patriots absolutely pump the guy's tires every once in a while to leak some stuff out. But reading things like, you know, Pro Football Focus and seeing other rankings online of these national outlets and listening to pundits, a lot of people out there are talking about J.C. Jackson. And over the past couple of months, I've heard a lot of J.C. Jackson could be a number one cornerback. Let's see. Gilmore had somewhat of a contract thing with the Patriots. They gave him a $4.5 million cash advance, not giving him an extension. And they have somebody that a lot of people are talking up as a number one corner in the league. They've got J.C. Jackson, and they've got so much more defensive back depth that if you are going to make a move like that, if you're going to make a move like trading the 2019 Defensive Player of the Year, if you're going to make that kind of move, you've got to make sure that you have a safety net. And if there's any position on this roster that has a safety net, it is arguably cornerback.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.